Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Stretching here. Get a little comfortable. Get those shoulders loose. I know it's just talking, but you got to be comfortable when you're talking. You know what I mean, Rach? A little tight today. Around the shoulder blades there. Yeah. Okay. Get that blood flowing. That's what makes a good podcast. Good blood flow. All right. That feels better. I can feel a little warmth now getting through my system there. But man, my shoulders are tight. Okay. You ready, sir? Let's do this thing. Put in the books. 409. Isn't there some detergent or some cleaner 409? You're too young for that. Yeah, but this is episode 409. 409, right? Yeah, that's got to be. I remember a white bottle. 409. Anyway, ready to go? Let's do this thing. Star, smile strong, get that finger on the trigger. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNradio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. And don't forget, get out there, hit the streets, tell your friends, tell your family, tell anybody who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. That loyalty and that devotion are much appreciated. Also, if you like what you hear and you're a newcomer to the podcast, or maybe you've been a long-time listener, maybe you've been listening since podcast number one back in May of 2016, doesn't matter. Reruns are fun too, you know. So go back, whether it's a podcast from 2 weeks ago or 2 years ago. You go to WGNradio.com, you go to the podcast section, you look for the prompt for this specific podcast, and there they are. Scroll down, load more. Scroll down, load more. Just like washing your hair. Wash, rinse, repeat. Scroll down, load more, repeat. Welcome to episode number 409. 409. I was just saying to Reggie before we started here, isn't there a cleaner, some kind of a detergent or some kind of a cleaner, a bleach, some kind of thing. I remember the commercials for 409. That just, it reminds me of something. 409, I wonder if they still make that. 409 was the name. I don't know what it stood for, but it was some kind of a cleaner, I think, right? They still make that stuff? Formula 409, cleaner, right, yeah. I'm looking on the internet machine right here. They still make it, too. It's an all-purpose cleaner, 409. I'm not sure. It's formula 409. I'm not sure what the formula stands. Like, what's formula 410? I guess there's many 409s. I'm just looking. Find your formula 409. There's formula 409 for carpets and, for floors. Yeah, for floors and granite and laminates and limestone and linoleum and marble and sandstone. Wow, counters, different, wow, tables, acrylics, glass, 409, outdoor car interiors, car exteriors, patio furnitures, blinds, mirrors. Wow, formula 409. Woo. That's unbelievable. Yeah. Well, that's what this episode is all about. This week's episode is Formula 409. Although, as you know, I don't like to say that. It's 409 or 409. It's not an O. I don't know how we got started in that. Long time ago, decades, maybe centuries ago, the letter O got substituted for the number zero. And within the context of our saying the numbers, we would say O, especially for phone numbers or any kind of numbers. We would say O. My phone number when I was a little kid was, the last four numbers was 1065, but I always said, you know, 1065. But once again, on the phone, there is an O, isn't there? Or is there not? I mean, there's a zero for the operator, but, you know, every phone, you know, the number used to have, I don't even know if that's even the case anymore now. I don't even, that's probably not even true because you don't even text that way anymore, but rotary phones and even touchtone phones used to have letters underneath the numbers. A lot of times the numbers, you would even hit the number, you would hit the letter rather than the number. When I was a little kid, my home phone number was Kildare. Was that, instead of 5-4, the first two numbers were 5-4, but it was also called, you said, Kill, what's your number? Kildare, you know, Hudson 32700, Hudson, you know. Number, the phone numbers used to have names. That's how crazy things are. Well, I know, I'm sure when I tell somebody that's even under, you know, under 40 maybe, they don't even remember that. But yeah, in my day, telephone numbers used to have words. But we got stuck with this O. No, zero is a number, and O is a letter. It's not O. It's zero. I always say zero. I make that a point to say zero. Or 100. Not O. It's not an O. It's a number. The O is not in there. It's a letter. But anyway, this is 409 or 409, not Formula 409, which is what that's called. I guarantee you anybody over the age of 50 remembers Formula 409. I bet you they don't say 409 or 409. It was 409. Anyway, that's what number episode this is. Boy, I could talk about anything, can't I? But that's why I do this. A lot of people say, geez, Jim, you know, when you're on the radio, you talk so much. Yeah? The radio is a talking medium. What am I supposed to do, sit there and not say anything? That's what you're supposed to do. That's why I got into that business. I like to talk. I'm a talker. So let me try to find a job that plays to that strength. And then when I talk, people say, you talk too much. What does that mean? If I didn't say anything, there'd be dead air. I don't know. Anyway, thank you for joining here, episode number 409. So I've been talking about a recent trip, vacation that my wife and I took. And I've been leading up to it with some of the things that go on before I even got on the trip that I found both interesting, at times frustrating, sometimes mysterious. But now we're getting to the actual trip, okay? I talked about putting my mail on hold and, you know, other things leading up to the trip, being on the plane and having the person in front of me recline all the way back. Now I'm going to tell you about when I actually got to the destination. The last couple of podcasts, the last couple of weeks, I've been doing a lead-in or lead-up, as they call it, or maybe even a tease, but now the tease is over. So now you get the full-blown Toronto's travel, or Toronto's travels, I should say, like Gulliver's travels, Toronto's travels. My wife and I went on a really interesting and fun trip because of COVID. A lot of like milestone things got sort of shuttled because of you couldn't really travel anywhere. The biggest one was one of our anniversaries. We were going to go, as we did last year, to Egypt. I've always wanted to see the pyramids, and I talked about that here on the podcast. We were supposed to go on that in 2020 for our anniversary. And of course, that trip got delayed 3 years because of COVID. And some other things going on that we always wanted to do that, you know, that got pushed back because we, you know, because of COVID, when travel just pretty much ended for a good period of time. So now we're trying to make up for that. And we're, you know, going on places, seeing things and trying to go places that we've always wanted to go to. We have been very fortunate. We've been able to travel to many of the places that we've always wanted to see. And around the country as well as around the world. I love traveling. I love going to new places. I love seeing some famous sites and then also seeing some things off the beaten path. I love seeing the way other people live. I love seeing historical things and artistic things. And so we've been very fortunate to go to some really cool locations around the world. And we've been, as I said, to most or many of the major kind of sites and cities around the world, and some of even some exotic, if you will, places. Like we've been to a safari in South Africa, and as I said, we went to Israel and Egypt last year, and we've and so this was one of those kind of things too. My wife has always wanted to see the Northern Lights. It's a very strange, odd, cool phenomenon that takes place in the upper reaches, the northern parts of the world. To some extent, it's explained, but it's also a very unpredictable, volatile, just kind of mysterious phenomenon that that happens without any warning, without any plan. That's why, you know, it happens in different parts of the world, as I said, mostly up north, but not in any regularity. You can't, it's not like Old Faithful. It doesn't happen every day or every time at this time of the year. It's around this time. But it can happen at any time. It really is an interesting phenomenon. But if you've ever seen pictures of it, some people have been lucky enough to see it in person. You can see it here in the United States. Once again, in the most northern parts, like say northern Michigan or northern Wisconsin, the northern parts of the country. But really, it's seen best or least most regularly in the more north parts of the globe, close to the North Pole, in the Arctic Circle, certainly around the upper parts of Russia and around Iceland and you know, in the Arctic Circle, around the northern parts of Norway and other parts up in that Arctic Circle area. And basically, from the way that I've learned about it since it was something, like I said, I wanted to see the pyramids. My wife wanted to see the Northern Lights. So we did the pyramids last year. We did the Northern Lights this year. And interestingly enough, like I said, you can find them here in the United States, but it's not as prevalent. A lot of places like Iceland have the Northern Lights. But I had noticed that there was a itinerary for a cruise that went into the Arctic Circle in the winter months of January, February, and March, that was called In Search of the Northern Lights. Now, once again, no guarantees and lots of disclaimers, by the cruise companies. We cannot guarantee that you will see the Northern Lights. However, we are going at a time of the year and a location of the year where the sightings are most prevalent. But once again, no guarantees that the week or so that you're traveling through that area, they're even going to happen once. So keep that in mind. And of course, you have an itinerary in these other areas throughout the region in the Arctic Circle and the upper parts of Norway, where you will see certain cities, as remote as they may be, and do some kind of cool winter activities. You know, we always associate cruise ships, especially. I mean, most vacations, right, in general, but certainly cruise ships, we always associate with warm climates, right? You know, on spring break, people don't go to the Arctic Circle, right? They go to, Florida or Cancun or San Padre Island. I don't even know if that's cool anymore. But they always go to warm places, Acapulco, California, Florida, obviously. You go to a warm climate, especially if you're from the Midwest or the northern part where you get a lot of, brutal or cold winters. You want a little relief from the cold, and you go to a warm climate. So this cruise was somewhat interesting and unique in that we would be going to a remote and very cold location on a cruise ship. And just the prospect of that was kind of interesting. Like I said, we like to do sort of things that are off the beaten track, not just the your typical vacations. And this not only did my wife want to see this specifically, but also in order to do it, it turned out to be an interesting expedition, if you will, to go on a cruise ship in the winter. So when you are buying things for your vacation, you're not buying swimsuits and sandals and Hawaiian shirts and warm, shorts and warm weather types of apparel. Just the opposite. You're going to the Arctic Circle throughout the run of this thing. The cruise ran from, they had different voyages, obviously, but from, mid-January to like mid-March. So you had to be prepared for any kind of winter weather. And some of the locations, depending on the time of year that you would go, would be, like major cold, like in the tens or in the even zeros or the single digits. Yeah, you're paying to go on a vacation for single-digit weather. That's what kind of crazy species we are, folks. Some people pay for sunshine. Other people pay for snow and freezing cold. But if you want to see those northern lights, that's kind of the optimum place to go at that time of year. But it was a unique situation. So as I said, we weren't buying swimsuits and shorts and loud Hawaiian shirts. We were buying parkas and long underwear and Nordic socks. And we were renting boots, like big galoshes, like big, thick, waterproof boots and kind of, plastic outer pants, almost like a jumpsuit, like a ski suit, so that if it did snow or if you were out, because we were doing a lot of activities where we were in snow. And so you want to have like a vinyl or a plastic pants that go over your regular pants so they won't get wet. and gloves and mittens and scarves and Under Armour or underwear, you know, kind of shirts to wear under. You always had to layer, you know. Now, once again, being in Chicago, a lot of this stuff we had. And we were getting, once we signed up for this cruise, and once again, you know, it was going to be cold. We knew we went in mid-April, in mid-February. And so we were getting these emails from the cruise company about, okay, now here's what you have to do and get these kind of clothings. And my wife was like, oh, my God, we got to get all this stuff. I said, well, so hold on. We have a lot of this stuff. We have winter hats. We have warm gloves. We have scarves. We have boots. We have thick socks. We live in Chicago. We have winter. We have cold winters. In fact, this winter, for about a week and a half, we had sub-zero temperatures. The temperature was 10 below zero. And we've lived in this area our whole lives. I said, the cruise company is doing their due diligence. They're giving all the passengers a heads up that, hey, you know, once again, this is not some warm weather cruise. You have to get a different kind of mindset on this one. But a lot of these people that are going to be going on this cruise are from warm weather cities. They think 50 degrees is cold. I said, they're speaking to people that are coming on this cruise from Florida or from California or from southern Texas and things like that where it's hot. They might not have these types of things in their closets. We have these things. We need them every year. We have heavy coats. We have thick gloves. We have big mittens. We have thick socks. We have sweatshirts and hoodies and sweaters and layers and long underwear. And we don't need some of these things. I haven't had all these. I've lived in this climate, you know, my whole life, and I've never bought any of this stuff. I'm not going to buy it for a week and a half where the temperature might even be warmer than where we live. And sure enough, we went to the Arctic Circle in February. The Arctic Circle. It even, just by saying it, doesn't it sound cold? Well, we went to the Arctic Circle, the upper reaches of Norway, some of the most northern cities in the world before you get to the North Pole. And ironically, when I look back at what our temperature was when we were there, it was colder. It was warmer here in Chicago. Or sometimes it was warmer where we were than in Chicago. And we were dressed for these blizzard things, and it was warmer where we were than it was in Chicago. It's a very odd time. We got lucky. The week before in some of these towns, as I said, it was 0, 5 degrees. When we got there, it was 30 or 40. Anybody who's lived in the Midwest or a cold climate in the winter knows that 30 and 40, that's, you got your coat open for that. 30 or 40 in the winter? Fantastic. It's when it's in the tens and the lower 20s and in the teens when it's cold. But my gosh, if it's 32, yeah, I've got a coat on, but I'm not freezing. If it's 40 in the winter, I might not even have a coat on. I might just be wearing a hooded sweatshirt. So thankfully, we didn't go crazy on stocking up on big, heavy clothes. We bought a lot. We brought a lot of things just in case, but we didn't have to go out and buy them. I'm sure some people that lived in warmer climates did have to buy it. Now, I did buy. Now, one thing I did buy, because I didn't really have it, because we were going to do a lot of outdoor activities, and I'll talk about that. So I did buy, for the first time since I was in sixth grade, I did buy one of those parkas, you know, like the warm parka coat that's kind of water resistant and kind of, you know, puffy, but its key element is the hood with the fur around it. Remember those? I haven't had a parka like that since I was in sixth grade. I bought it at Sears. It was a red one. Everybody had those. There was like three colors. And at like Sears, that was where you went to buy that. There was one year, I think it was like fourth, fifth, or sixth grade, or maybe it was, but you know, because it was cold here. But for some reason, that parka with the hood that then when you zipped it up, it actually extended out. It had fur on it normally, but then when you zipped it up, it almost made this kind of cone in front of you. It was very dangerous, really, for kids when I think back on it later. I mean, I remember you really, you know, some kids did zip it up all the way and it completely covered your face, which was great for the cold. But then you basically were blind except for what you could see right in front of you. So if a little kid was walking home from school, especially, you had to make a concerted effort. You really had to turn your head far to the right and far to the left when you're crossing the street, or you couldn't see. I remember first getting it. It was really cool when you zipped it up and your head was all covered, and that the front of the hood actually stuck out about 3 or 4 inches, which looked kind of cool at first, but then you realized you were pretty much blinded of anything on the side, and then you unzipped it, and of course, you just maybe wore the hood right up to your face, and you still had to turn around because you had this big furry thing around the hood. But I did buy that coat because I didn't really have a winter coat like that. For the most part, my winter coat was kind of like an overcoat. That's pretty much what I wear in the winter. It was just an overcoat, you know, more of a dressy overcoat. So I didn't have one of those. I hadn't had one of those in, as I said, I can't remember the last time I had one of those coats. I'm not really a big winter outdoors person. I'm not a big skier when I've gone, I've always just rented some things. But I don't go ice fishing and I don't go skiing. So I don't really have like a ski jacket or a ski vest or something like that. So I've always had just an overcoat. So I did have to buy the parka, which I'm glad I did because thankfully it was cold. There was a couple times it snowed and even rained where we were. That's how warm it was. It was raining one day, even though we were out in the frozen tundra, you know, quotes. We were out in the frozen tundra, but it was like 35 degrees and it was raining in the frozen tundra of some of these northern parts of Norway. But so I was glad I had the hood, but at the same time, the hood zippered off too, which is good. So now I think when I wear that coat, now I will wear that coat as one of my winter coats now, because it's a nice coat and it was warm, certainly, and I like the style of it. And I will not wear the hood with it. I will take the hood off. But the hood did come in handy for a few times when we were in some really cold areas doing some excursions. But at the same time, the hat, the hood was an inconvenience. I needed it a couple of times, but it really does cut off your sight of your line of vision. And so I found myself wearing the stocking cap underneath the hood, and for the most part, not wearing the hood. Took some pictures with it because it looked pretty cool. It gave the appearance of a cold. We were out in the, but it really wasn't as cold as the pictures looked. But the pictures looked cold, and that was cool. We were surrounded by snow, and it looked like. But long term use of that coat now, in the aftermath of this thing, I already unzipped the hood and put it away. So when I wear the coat next winter, it will be hoodless. But I liked it. It looked cool, and it did serve a purpose a few times. But that was pretty much my biggest expenditure for this trip, was to get a parka, which, as I said, not only did come in handy on the trip, because we did some night excursions, because that's when you see the northern lights. So we were out sometimes at 1 a.m. out in a very barren, open area, windy. So the hood did come in handy, and the heavier coat. I would have looked kind of crazy walking around in that area with a tailored overcoat. you know how it is. Not only do you have to get something practical, but you also have to look the part too. So I had my nice, puffy winter parka coat, but I have literally not had one of those, I think, since I was between any time between fourth and fifth or sixth grade. It was probably like fourth or fifth, to be honest with you. By sixth, I think I stopped doing it. Probably fourth or fifth is when I had my red parka from Sears. So it took about, you know, 4 or 5 decades later to get another one. But we were prepared apparel wise. It made for our bags to be very stuffed because our luggage was heavy, and you know we couldn't even bring a lot of stuff because everything took up so much space. You have a couple of hoodies and a couple of sweaters, and your bags are pretty much, unless you have one of those big giant trunks like they used to have, 100 years ago with the stickers on them. But anyway, we knew what we were getting into. And as I said, this was my wife always wanted to see the Northern Lights. No guarantees. Actually, the name of this trip was In Search of the Northern Lights. So they were, even in the title of this specific cruise, they were giving you a vague word. In search of, not seeing the Northern Lights, because there's no guarantees you would see them. As I've said, if you've ever seen pictures, there's some spectacular videos and photos of the Northern Lights in various places around the world, but mostly up far near the North Pole, where the entire sky is filled. Most of the Northern Lights that you see are green in color. There's mostly three main colors. There's green, there's red, and there's very rarely a blue color of light. And a lot of times, the lights are moving and almost dancing, and in different shapes and different configurations. And it's quite a sight when you've seen some videos. You go online and get some amazing pictures where literally the whole sky is lit up. And so, of course, that's the goal when you go on this, to see something like that. I don't know how often that kind of visual display happens in a Northern Light sighting. Based on personal experience after being out there for more than a week, I can tell you that we did see some Northern Lights, but we didn't get to see that full sky of green and red dancing shapes and like that. That I think those happen. They certainly happen, no question. But that's not a regular occurrence. From what I understand, having gone on the trip during the cruise, they actually had some educational talks during the cruise to explain the phenomenon and a lot of the sights that we saw. Many cities in the north part of Norway claim to be the city of the Northern Lights. You'd be surprised how many cities actually define themselves as the city of the Northern Lights, but yet there's several of them. So we visited several of the cities of the Northern Lights. There seem to be a lot of these cities. We started in the northern Norway city of Bergen, which is not really a place where the Northern Lights happen. It's not as north. It's not in the Arctic Circle. But then once you get into the Arctic Circle, we stopped at three different areas, a city called Alta and Tromsø, and Narvik, and those areas, not so much Narvik, which is a little south of the Arctic Circle, but certainly Alta and Tromsø are in the Arctic Circle and very north in the northern part of Norway, and not right next to the North Pole, but certainly closer than I've ever been. In fact, we even got a certificate in our rooms. We crossed into the Arctic Circle at 2 a.m. I don't remember the date. I still have the certificate, but we got those put in our room. They had the time that we crossed into the Arctic Circle. And but we did get to see the Northern Lights. It actually got to be funny. I mean, that's why everybody on this cruise wanted to see the Northern Lights. And so there were certain excursions that we would take while we were in a certain port. The best time to see the Northern Lights, for the most part, once again, this is a very unscientific kind of thing, so you never know when they're going to show up, but mostly obviously at night when it's dark, and a lot of times in the early morning hours. So a lot of the excursions that we took, many of them started at like 10:30, 11 o'clock at night and went until 1 or 2 in the morning. We were out and we went to some very high elevations and some areas that were far away from the city lights. You want to get into the most remote areas where there's great sight lines. So most of the time you're out in the wilderness at a higher elevation where it's clear so you can get a good look at the sky. But once again, it depended on every night. If it was cloudy, the chances for the Northern Lights were low. Interestingly enough, if it was too warm, the conditions weren't great to see the Northern Lights. Or if, this was even funny, even if there was a bright moon, that would detract from seeing the Northern Lights. You really wanted pitch black dark and a little colder. That apparently was the perfect environment to have this. But once again, it's a crapshoot. From what we were told and from what seems to be the scientific explanation, an accepted explanation for these is that the Northern Lights are a combination of the sun. I mean, this is crazy when you think about it. The sun is this huge and, extremely hot, eruptive star that's keeping not only us warm, but the entire galaxy warm. And it's explosive. It's shooting off explosions. I mean, it's just a fireball. It's amazing when you think about the sun. And as far away as we are from the sun, I mean, you know how hot it can get. Could you imagine, my gosh, I mean, what it is on Mercury? Woo. So apparently, the sun shoots off these gases and these explosions that happen from it, and they shoot out into space, and then they are drawn to the Earth by our magnetic pull around the Earth, and that magnetic pull is strongest at the top of the world. That's where the magnetic North Pole, and there's the South Pole, but the magnetic pull brings these gases and these explosions that come off of the sun, and they draw it to the Earth. But the Earth is shielded from the full impact of those, but at the same time, those gases have light which is shot from them, and with all of our atmospheres surrounding the Earth, the ozone and the other protective types of atmospheres around the Earth, that's where these lights are seen. That's why they're seen. And that's why they're seen more north, because of the magnetic pull of the North Pole. And the different colors are dependent on what type of elements and minerals are in those gases. So depending on the concentration of nitrogen or oxygen or hydrogen, the different colors come. So the most prevalent, the most common Northern Light is green. And the second most common is red. And then blue is the most rare of them all. So as I said before, if you see pictures of the Northern Lights, a lot of times you will see the green filling up the entire sky with little, you know, splashes of red as well. It seems like red and green are the most common, but you can see a blue sometime. So, I mean, the name of this cruise is In Search of the Northern Lights. So several of the excursions that we would go on, we'd go on some during the day when you're at a certain port, but then at night you'd also go on some of these to get in the optimum place to see it. Now, obviously, many times we were at sea, traveling through the sea in the Arctic Circle, and the sky is up there above us. We were docked at night. And so many times throughout the trip, it almost became like we were firemen. I mean, this was an interesting cruise, right? I mean, you know, you go on a cruise to relax and to see some places and to you know, have some fun. But everybody was on a mission. Everybody went there to see the Northern Lights. We weren't there just to hang out and have, you know, drinks with little umbrellas in them. You know, it was like, we came to see the Northern Lights, and we knew that they would be a crapshoot to see them, and you'd most likely have to see them at night. So we dressed warm, and we were prepared whenever there was a sighting to get out, you know, either on the deck if we were docked, or hopefully on your excursion at night in different places. They would take you to, like I said, remote places, or you'd go, you know, with a guide who would be they would have some kind of technology. They could tell like where there might be Northern Lights based on temperature and everything else. I don't know how legit that is or not, to be honest with you, but but that's what they propose. And many times when we were either docked or we were at sea, there was somebody on that ship whose job it was just to look at the sky all night. And if there was any sign of any kind of Northern Light, whether it was a huge sky-filled light display or just a band or a couple of bands of green or bands of red or bands of blue, they would make an announcement on the ship at any time. So it could be 10 o'clock at night or it could be 1 in the morning, and all of a sudden you'd be sleeping or whatever and you'd hear, "Attention, there is the Northern Lights are visible." And so then everybody, like, you know, the first time that happened was like the first one of the first second nights we were in the town of Alta. We were docked, and you know, like at 11 o'clock, 11:30 at night, we were in our room, and the call comes, and you know, we're like, whoa, we're scrambling to get our clothes on and our coats and get dressed up and run up to the top of the ship or the top deck, and everybody's running up there, and then finally you get up there, and we saw, you know, they a lot of times, you know, if it doesn't fill the sky like those pictures like I've mentioned, you know, they these lights come and go. They just kind of there and then they fade. I mean, they're very, you know, it's a crapshoot. Based on the way they talk about it, these gases, who knows when these gases are going to appear, when they're going to reflect, when, it's all a crapshoot. And sometimes they last and sometimes they just dissipate, just like a cloud. They might be strong for a second, and within 5 minutes, they just kind of fade away, and then they're gone. So by the time we got up there, we just saw some last remnants and some people, but everybody's up there with their cell phones. And then there's a special way to set your phone and your camera. A lot of times, you can't even see the Northern Lights with your bare eyes. For some reason, your phone or your camera or your camera on your phone, you be looking right at it with your eyes and you say there's nothing there, but you aim your camera at it and there they are. A very odd phenomenon. So, of course, as I said, everybody ran up there and everybody's sitting there waiting. And you could see these, some people got up there first. Some people just happened to be walking around, maybe just on their own to say, hey, let's just stay out here and maybe we'll see something. And they got lucky. They got to see them when they first happened. But we didn't really do that until we learned that that's what you sort of have to do. And we actually got used to that then when we saw the tail end of some green lights, but it, as I said, it wasn't like some majestic, awe-inspiring, sky-filled, you know, light display. There's a couple of streaks of green light. Looked pretty cool, no doubt. But I, once we got back to the room, I was like, okay, I said, from now on, we have to be ready to be like firemen. We have to have, and there's no, don't worry about what you look like or whatever. Wear to bed some clothes that are comfortable to sleep in, but also that you feel comfortable being seen in public, and have your shoes ready and your coat ready right by the bed. And when we get the call, you jump out of bed, throw a hat on if your hair looks crazy. Throw your coat on, get your shoes on, and let's get up to the top deck so we don't miss them. And this happened like three or four times throughout the trip, and we were getting to be pretty good at it. And all of a sudden, you'd get the call, and you'd be in the middle of either sleeping or just lounging around or watching some TV late at night. You know, you get back to your room, and all of a sudden, you'd hear the voice, and you're like, uh-oh, this is it. Let's go. And everybody's running down the halls, getting in the elevators, running up the stairs to get to, that's why we're all there. We're there to see the Northern Lights. And, I mean, some people got lucky. They were in this one couple was in with their friends, you know, it was like late at night and they were in the hot tub. There was a hot tub. There was a jacuzzi. And, you know, it was, even though it was cold outside, it was warm in there and they were just hanging out in there and, you know, 10 o'clock, 10:30, 11 o'clock, whatever it was. And all of a sudden, they got some really cool pictures of it. And we got some cool pictures. And one of the best, coolest things, even though it wasn't the most visible, but it was there, it was more visible on the camera than it was by the human eye, was we did see the blue Northern Lights. And they, once again, just a few little streaks, nothing major. But they were the blue Northern Lights. You can see them, and I've got pictures of them. And then we've got some cool pictures of the green ones throughout the thing. But as I said, we didn't get that real big display. We went to a museum in one of the cities, and I was talking to one of the people that work there, that live there, and I said, well, you know, how often have you seen the Northern Lights? And even the people that live there said, yeah, you know, I mean, you see them, but he said, but like, here's a video I took like 6 months ago, and it really was, the whole sky was lit up, and they were moving and dancing, and there was red and green, and it really looked cool. But even for someone that lives there, he saw that one time in 6 months. So the odds of being there that 1 week or so, I think we were actually on the ship for maybe 8 days or something like that, 9 days. You know, the odds are you're going to see something, but you're not going to probably see this amazing light display. If you do, it's pure luck. So we were certainly happy. It wasn't what we hoped for or expected, but we certainly did see some Northern Lights. We just didn't get that huge, big, you know, display that you see. However, it was just, I would still say that the trip, despite not seeing it in that fashion, was still a fun and successful trip, because we did have some really cool excursions in some of these cities. Most of the cities up in the northern part of Norway are very small, you know, kind of remote cities, pretty in their own way, but, you know, you know, it's cold up there, and the cities reflect that. Now, apparently in the summer, it gets nice there and warm, but it certainly gets very cold in the winter. And so, you know, there's not a lot to do. Some really cool, some great fire pits, no question about that. But also very dangerous a lot of times when it's cold, especially if it rains a little, a lot of ice. here in the United States, especially in the Chicago area, we love to put salt to melt the ice. They don't use the salt. I don't know if it's environmentally why they don't use it or not. You know, a lot of those northern countries like, you know, Norway and Sweden and things that are very environmentally conscious. So they don't use salt. Maybe I'm sure salt has some chemical thing that is not good. And so they use like gravel. It's not that the snow is melt or the ice is melted when you're walking on it. They spread gravel in order to give you traction. And many places, and even on the ship, they gave you like spikes that you could put on the bottom of your shoes so that the spikes would dig into the ice when you were walking. Some of the sidewalks were plowed, but many of them were not. And it was kind of dicey. You know, on these cruise ships, they have hospitals. They have medical centers. They have an ICU. And they have a full kind of hospital. And one day the doctor was on one of our tours, and he was saying that, you know, in some of these cities where we stopped, you know, people fell on the ice and some broke arms, and, you know, some broke wrists or some, you know, hurt their shoulders. So it was a very interesting trip, because you wouldn't think that you would go to this place voluntarily. You know, this is like Siberia. You know, in Russia, they send people to places like this as a punishment. We did it voluntarily and paid for the privilege because we wanted to see these lights. But once again, for my wife and I, having lived in Chicago, which we can get some Arctic winters and some polar vortexes or whatever you want to call them. So the weather, as I said, in many ways was much milder than we would have in a Chicago winter. So we were able to navigate more than some people that come from warmer weather climates or have never even seen snow. I mean, some people were taking pictures in the parking lots by the docks where the ship was docked, by the huge piles of snow that were plowed, just the mountains of plowed snow. People were taking pictures in front of those. Here in Chicago, we've got snow drifts and we've got piles of snow we walk past without even thinking about it, but people from you know, California or Florida that have never even seen snow, this was a sight alone, just to stand by a mountain of plowed snow. In Chicago, we can't wait to get rid of that. These people were taking pictures of it. Although one of my favorite pictures actually was a picture of our ship at a dock, with the ship in the background and these mountains of plowed snow in the foreground. It was a strange sight to see this cruise ship, which, as I said before, usually is associated with going to warm climates, to be surrounded by snow piles and snow mountains as opposed to palm trees. So that made it kind of cool. No, we did not encounter any icebergs like the Titanic, thankfully. But there were some nights when the sea was mad, my friend. The sea was angry, my friend, like an old man bringing soup back at a deli. There were some nights on our way back toward, after we went, now we went to the northern part, now we were making our way back south. We had two straight sea days where we just sailed. We didn't stop. And the ship was really getting rocked. I mean, it was really shaking. And the cruise director said, yeah, I know it's been a little rough, but, and then he joked and he said, but what did you expect? You booked a cruise in the middle of the Arctic Circle in February. And on our way back, we started in Bergen and we went up north. And then on our way back, we were supposed to stop in Amsterdam in the Netherlands. And then we ended up in a town on the eastern coast of England called Tilbury, where then we would go to Heathrow Airport to go home. But we docked in Tilbury, England. We were supposed to stop in Amsterdam before Tilbury for a day. But we lost time because the seas were so rough and the winds were so strong that the ship could not go at its full capacity. And so, for instance, apparently the ship can sail at 21 knots, but it was to get through these waves and against the wind, it could only go at 14. And so, unfortunately, we had to skip our stop in Amsterdam because we had to get back to England on time for everybody to catch their flights back. So we weren't sure until the night before. They were still holding out hope that we might be able to get to Amsterdam. We might be, we would certainly be about 4 or 5 hours delayed, but we would still be able to stay there to a certain time, but we would have to leave Amsterdam at 5 p.m. in order to get to England on time for everybody to get there and get off the ship and drive to Heathrow and get their connecting flights. And that was the biggest concern. And so sadly, about 8 o'clock the night before Amsterdam, we were supposed to be there in the morning, they made the announcement that they've decided that we have to skip the port. And that's part of any kind of cruise, depending on the weather. You really can't plan for that. So that was disappointing. My wife and I have been to Amsterdam, so it wasn't a big bummer, but it's also one of our favorite cities, and I was looking forward to see it again. But we really went for the Northern Lights. We weren't going to see Northern Lights in Amsterdam. That wasn't the point of it. That was kind of just here's Amsterdam's on the way back. Get an extra city to see on the itinerary. And I love Amsterdam, but it really wasn't a part of the Arctic Circle Search for Northern Lights experience. So if you had to miss a port, if you were going there for the Northern Lights, you weren't going to see the Northern Lights in Amsterdam. That's not a part of it. So it was disappointing because I like to see Amsterdam. I like to be there for a day again. We've seen most of the major sites in Amsterdam. We've been to, on the canals, the different cruises on the canals and in the downtown area. And they have the red light district there, which is kind of fun to walk through. And Anne Frank's house and some of the architecture. It's really a cool place. But we did have to bypass that because the weather was really, a little rough on those seas. Now, we were lucky. As I said, there's no guarantees on this, when especially you're going up to the Arctic Circle, as the cruise director joked, in the middle of winter. We were lucky. The cruise before us and the cruise before that, the seas were so rough at that time of the year that they got stuck in one of the cities for 4 days, and they basically couldn't make a couple of the stops at all. And once again, that's part of the trip. That's the kind of chance you take. One group, the weather was so bad and that the ship couldn't even leave, and the cruise company had to charter 3 planes. The ship had 900 people on it. It was a smaller cruise ship. It wasn't one of the big 2,000 people ones. The cruise company, in order for people to make those flights in England, the cruise company had to charter 3 planes with 300 people on each with full crews and fly them from one of the northern cities in Norway, Tromsø, to Heathrow in London. Had to fly them because the ship could not go. I guess the waves were 70 feet high. It was some crazy thing. So we got lucky. We only missed one port, and it really had nothing to do with the Northern Lights experience. So we got lucky in that. We got to go on to see all the ports and everything like that. And as I said, some of the excursions on land were fun to see. The most fun, certainly, was we went on a dog sled ride with huskies out into the open frozen tundra, if you will. And that was fun. These dogs are amazing athletes. They're raised to do this. They love to do this. We spent time with the dogs. They're the nicest dogs. They're so energetic and kind. They jump up on you, but they're not snapping at you. They're not barking at you. They want you to pet them. I've never saw dogs. They're very intimidating because they're big, but they're solid. And but they bark and they want you to pet them and they rub their stomachs and they'll jump up on you and they're excited to see you. It was really fun. And then when we went out for the dog sled ride, there was about 11 dogs on our sled. My wife and I were sitting, and then there was a driver behind us, and we went through all this beautiful countryside, surrounded all in the snow and surrounded by these beautiful mountains, and these dogs were just, they were running, and they were loving it. It was really the high point of the trip. It was cool to see, the Northern Lights. We didn't see it as much as we had liked to. But the dog sled was really cool. And then another night when we went out in search of the Northern Lights at a campground, at an indigenous campground up on an open area by higher elevation one night from about 11 o'clock to 2 in the morning, while we're waiting for the lights to come, which didn't come that night, sadly, but they had other things to do, and they, as I said, give us a little talk, and they had these different cabins that we can go into and had different things in there. But they also had reindeer there. Reindeer there are big up in the Arctic Circle. Reindeer are used for meat. And you'd be surprised. The reindeer, you know, we see these, the stories of Santa with those reindeer, but reindeer are very small. They do have the big antlers, but they don't look like the pictures that we see in Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer and things like that. They're kind of short and stout. They're close to the ground. They do have the big antlers, but they're very small. And they're really, once again, very, I mean, I don't know if these were, trained that way, but, we were able to pet them and feed them and very docile, very nice animals, but very different than what you would expect them to be. But they actually herd reindeer there. And we went to some indigenous, there's a group called the Sami people that were from there. And so we went in a Sami camp, and when we're in a big giant teepee, and we were hearing about the different cultures there, which was kind of cool. And I had reindeer jerky. Yes, reindeer jerky. As I said, the port cities were nice. There was a Hard Rock in Tromso on the main drag. And a lot of, a lot of interesting little stores and towns. There was a lot of the explorers from the time who were up in the northern Arctic Circle. That there's, I think there was a guy named Kirkland and Amundsen. And in two of the places, in both Alta and in Tromso, there were some really beautiful churches with some very distinct and unique architecture. The one in Alta, their Arctic Cathedral was really a cool looking outside kind of design that almost looked like a funnel on the outside, on the top. And then when you went in, the inside of the church was very interesting. It's used as kind of a church and a meeting place for people because it's kind of a remote city. There's, I think in Alta, there's only like 7,000 people. So the church is kind of a meeting place for people. There's just a small little downtown drag with a few different stores. It's a very remote city, and but there is a museum there too, and there's a lot of exhibits there of some of the oldest cave drawings of the prehistoric era are found in that area there. So very interesting to see some of these original cave drawings and cave carvings in the museum at Alta. But this church was really interesting in its architecture. And one of the coolest thing about it was on the altar, it was obviously a Christian church, and the figure of Jesus, you know, most Catholic or Christian churches have the figure of Jesus on the cross, and he's usually looking down in agony, right? He's on the cross dying. But the goal here by the architect was to build some optimism. And so the figurine was not at all realistic. It was more just a shape of the cross of a person with the arms outstretched. But rather than the head being down in agony, the head portion of it looked up to the sky, and there was a window there. So the goal is to be more of optimism and hope and life with the light shining on it and the figure looking up, rather than the head being down in agony. And it was just a form. It wasn't a person necessarily. It was the shape of a person with their arms outstretched, representing both the cross as well as Jesus being on it. But it wasn't a formed, detailed face or a body. It was more of a form of a body that had the arms outstretched, but the head clearly looking and pointing up, which really was a moving kind of sculpture there. And then in the in Tromsø, their Arctic cathedral was similar in many ways. On the outside, at least, it looked almost like the Sydney Opera House with the different layers. It was a very distinct, once again, architecture that, you know, really stood out. As you looked over the expanse of the city, you saw that, and it really stood out. It was a cool place to visit as well. So the ports were interesting. The excursions were fun. You certainly things you wouldn't do normally, like a dog sled ride. We didn't go on it because it was rather expensive, but there's, in one of the cities, they have an ice hotel. A hotel of 20 rooms where you stay overnight, or you can visit and go to the bar, but everything in the hotel is made of ice. Now, they have deer skins and reindeer skins to sit on and to sleep on, but the chairs, the walls, the bed, they have the skins that you sit on, but everything is made of ice. And it takes apparently 5 weeks to make this hotel. And then when the weather gets warm, they just leave it and it melts. And they build a new hotel next winter. And from what I understand, the people that visited there and stayed over there we were stayed over in the dock in the port overnight. So people actually stayed in that hotel. It cost like $2,000, and they said it was really cold. Well, it's an ice hotel. What do you expect? Now, as I said, we got lucky with the weather, and I got lucky in that. One thing I did buy, in addition to my parka, was a hat that had some ear covers on it, you know, in case it got cold. I didn't really need the hat because it didn't get that cold, but you never know. So I bought this kind of hat. It was kind of cool. It was one piece, and you know, you had the ear covers, and it looked like a baseball hat with ear covers, you know. So, but it was too hot. I wore it. We were going out at night, but even at night it wasn't that cold. So I took it, and it was a very pliable hat, and I put it in my pocket. And I always put it in this one spot in the room. And then one day I went to look for it, and I couldn't find the hat. And I'm like, oh, I lost my hat. And I said, I know I had it in my pocket, but I must have dropped it somewhere. Who knows where? We were out to many different places, especially out in these, you know, these remote areas at night. Who knows if it fell? So my wife said, well, why don't you check the lost and found on the ship? And I was like, what are the odds of that? You know, they're going to find my black hat. You know, come on, there's 900 people. I could have dropped it out when we were on the, you know, out in the petting the reindeer or wherever we were 2 nights ago. It's not going to be there. So on the last day of the thing, I said, well, let me go to the lost and found for the heck of it. Guess what? My hat was there. At the lost and found. And guess where I dropped it? On the gangway, it fell out. As I was one night, I'm probably returning to the ship, and I probably could figure out exactly how I lost it. I had it in my pocket. As I said, it was a very foldable, pliable hat. And when you go on a cruise, they give you this card that you use as your ID card. And when you go on and off the ship, you have to, you know, to show it, and they beep you in so that they know when all the people are back on the ship. It has your picture, you know, that it shows up on a computer and it beeps you in, and they know what room you are in, and you got your picture there, and they know that they can move on to the next port because everybody has been checked in who left the ship. You beep it when you leave, and you beep it when you flash it, and it beeps when you come back on. Well, I bet you my hat fell out of my pocket on the gangway as I was walking up one night or day trying to get that card that I had in my pocket. And so I was, the lost and found was basically a big drawer. And I said, I know the odds are crazy. I even told the woman, I said, I'm sure the odds are, but let me just check. And she opens up the drawer, and the first thing I see is my hat. I'm like, there it is. So I not only found some of the Northern Lights, I also found my lost hat. But it really was a very interesting, relaxing trip. It was really, I mean, like I said, aside from those couple of nights when it was a little shaky, but it was a fun trip. No, we did not go out on the deck. We did not go swimming, although there was an indoor pool. And they did this one thing one day where people jumped into the pool. They filled up this little wading pool filled with ice, and you can jump in and become a Order of the Blue Nose or something. It was just kind of a goofy thing. But it wasn't a warm weathered trip. It wasn't your usual kind of cruise, certainly, but it was fun, and it was different, and it was interesting, and it was educational. And we did see some of the Northern Lights, but we got to do some things that we never would have done before. Not only enjoying the outdoors like that in such a remote and beautiful area, because the mountains were gorgeous. I mean, the scenery was just, you know, breathtaking. The mountains were all snow-capped, and while we were either, cruising through some of the inside passages or, at the towns, they're always all surrounded by mountains. But the dog sled thing was a once-in-a-lifetime experience. So very memorable, and petting and seeing the reindeers and seeing the Northern Lights. It was pretty cool. We had a really good time. It was worth having the person sitting in front of me in my lap when they reclined, and it was worth coming home and finding that there was some mail in my mailbox. So even though those were some irritants, I didn't let it ruin my trip, and we had a really fun, great time, and once again made some new fun memories. And that's what, to me, travel is all about, is not only going somewhere different, seeing some things you would never get a chance to see, doing some things you would never get a chance to do, meeting people you would never get a chance to meet. And for me, it's just getting out of your comfort level. Those are the kind of trips that I enjoy. So that's why we've gone on a safari and we've gone to some places to get out of your comfort zone. Some people go on vacation to be in the ultimate comfort zone. But I like to get out of my comfort zone. And this certainly was a trip that got me out of my comfort zone. It got me out into the wilderness, in the cold, in the snow, with boots on, and, well, the first parka I've worn since I was in fifth grade. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. And don't forget to tell your friends, tell your family, tell anyone who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. Hope you enjoyed episode number 409. I'm Jim Tarano. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. From the end of my mind to your ears. Mush! Mush! Mush!